Since the eruption of militant protests, which overthrew Tunisia's dictator in mid-January, uprisings have spread across the Middle East and North Africa. After the unexpected fall of staunch U.S. ally Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, other autocratic regimes in the region are being challenged by their people in the streets like never before. Anti-government protests have been quickly organized in a diverse group of nations, including Bahrain, Yemen, Algeria, Morocco, Iran, Djibouti, Jordan, Kuwait, Sudan, and Syria. The embattled monarchy of Bahrain, home to the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet, initially cracked down on protesters, but in recent days the police and the army have pulled back and the royal family has offered some concessions. Rising violence has also been seen against protesters demanding the ouster of U.S.-backed Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh. But some of the worst violence reported thus far in this wave of Middle East protests is taking place in Libya, where government troops loyal to Muammar Gaddafi, in power for 41 years, are battling anti-regime demonstrators. News reporters have been banned from Libya. However, some eyewitness accounts say as many as 300 people have been killed. In a televised address on February 22nd, Gaddafi vowed to fight to his last drop of blood and die as a martyr at the end. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Chris Tenzing, editor of Middle East Report. He examines the common threads between the protest movements that have been unleashed across the region over the past 2 months and the response of the U.S. government that has for decades supported many of the dictatorships now under attack.
Every country has its unique set of circumstances, its particularities, and the outbreak of an uprising in Algeria would have different approximate causes than in Jordan and so on. But there are some things that are shared in common by all of these countries that have seen mass protests in the last couple of months. And I think it's important to note that the unrest started in Tunisia, which is in many ways a country that is sort of the archetypal Arab autocracy, which we see replicated in capitals across the region. And to wit, you have pretty much an absolute distinction between the state and the society. You had also a state that was increasingly dominated by a very narrow clique around the ruling family of President Ben Ali and a very, you know, small group of close cronies. And you had a population that was living in a great deal of fear on a daily basis. And so, you know, the idea was, for a long time, that these regimes could essentially follow, you know, what we might call the China model, a modified China model, whereby you could have economic liberalization, the opening up of the economic sphere, without any parallel political liberalization. And Tunisia was kind of the archetype of that sort of regime. So for the archetype of that kind of regime to fall in the course of a month through almost entirely peaceful popular protests, almost all of the violence in Tunisia was waged by the state against the protesters. For that to happen in that way in such a short time absolutely galvanized the entire region. It had a couple of effects. First, it just absolutely shattered this psychological barrier, this barrier of fear of the regimes and their security services, which had prevented populations from carrying out these kinds of uprisings before. It showed that a dictator, no matter how strong his police forces, no matter how much cash he had lavished on his security services over the years, and no matter how staunch his backing from various Western capitals, he could still be overthrown through people power in the street.
Chris, as we've seen these multiple challenges across the Middle East and North Africa, I've heard some historians talk about a similar wave of a dissent against autocratic regimes in Eastern Europe in the late 1980s, before the collapse of the Soviet Union. Interestingly, of course, during that time, the United States was on the side opposing the Soviet Union and its satellite states. Here, though, in the Middle East, we have the United States long and fast allies of these dictators. What is the long-term consequences, in your view, for United States foreign policy, where the main pillars have seemed to be to protect our access to oil, to protect Israel, and ensure stability at all costs?
Right. Well, I think what we're seeing is that the third of those pillars, the pillar of stability, is crumbling into dust. And the United States has been in a very tight spot with the uprisings in Egypt in particular and subsequently, particularly what's been happening in Bahrain and Yemen and Jordan and to a lesser extent Libya. Even Gaddafi, too, is now a U.S. Arab ally. So the U.S. is hence in a similar spot with him. And basically what the Obama administration has tried to do is speak out of both sides of its mouth. The United States cannot come out forthrightly and say we don't support people demonstrating for their natural rights as human beings in the streets. So, of course, U.S. politicians from Obama to Hillary Clinton on down have said many times that the United States supports the protesters' demands, or at least supports political reform that would satisfy some of the protesters' demands. But on the other hand, the U.S. has not, in any of these cases, made very forceful statements at all vis-a-vis the autocrats who are using various means of coercion to put down the protests. The U.S., subsequently, in Tunisia and in Egypt, the places where the regime change has already occurred, is taking steps to try to ensure that there is still a stable government there that can be trusted to carry out various roles in support of U.S. strategic goals in the region. Senators McCain and Lieberman were in Tunisia praising the steps that the regime remnant there has taken to effect a political transition in Tunisia and offering continued security aid to continue to beef up Tunisia's security services, the very same police that Tunisians were in the streets demonstrating against before Ben Ali's downfall. So I don't think that these events are going to magically change the whole focus of U.S. grand strategy in the region for the last 60 years, but I do think that the successor regimes, or I hope successor governments, I hope the term government will be more appropriate in the future, in these countries, I'm not sure that they will be willing to play their appointed role in U.S. grand strategy any longer. And that, I think, is the key question rather than the policy orientation of Washington. So this is a tremendously important historical moment. It's hard to know where it's leading. But for sure, the region is just never going to be the same again. And the political culture of the region, if nothing else, has been changed for good.
That was Chris Tenzing, editor of Middle East Report, published by the Middle East Research and Information Project. Read their analysis online at MERIP.org.